we get the hour underway like we do each Tuesday by welcoming into the program our friend, the talented writer, Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
What's up, RK?
My goodness, the government has reopened. The monument is yours once again. How did it go?
It didn't go well on account of indolent park rangers.
Oh, no.
Now, you know, I show up yesterday, and I'm ready for this. I'm back to zero after going 11 straight climbs in December, and I know I'm going to have to take my time. Basically like an April day, right? No rain, no snow, 40 degrees. And the park rangers, they're playing hooky. They've not opened it.
Well, that's not fair.
Yeah, so I kind of just stood and looked up and shook my fist, albeit with respect for the obelisk, and turned around and came back home.
Man. So you didn't go out and run another 10 or 15 miles.
Oh, that's a bad time. Running, you can tell when you do the running, it's just not good for you. Joint-wise,
no,
like...
It hurts.
It's going to add up over time, and I feel like if I keep doing 6 miles a day or 9 miles a day, I'm going to be all stooped and kind of like some pigeon with its back thrown out. So no, I'd like to be done with that.
Yeah, you don't want that at all. Well, Colin, you've got a piece in the Wall Street Journal, an op-ed that's coming out celebrating Jackie Robinson, whose centennial is 2 days away on the 31st. And you make a great case that Robinson was not only one of the most influential players in the game, but a game changer. And none of that has to do with race, but with talent.
Yeah, we're teasing this one because it hasn't come out yet. But what I wanted to do in this op-ed was something that might sound simple, but I think these days it's pretty radical. And that was to discuss Jackie Robinson with making no mention whatsoever of color, race, crossing lines, that kind of history, which, as we know, of course, is formidable, obviously. What Robinson and what Larry Doby did 3 months later in the American League, basically, doesn't get much credit, of course, although I think he should, is beyond the pale of what we could expect from an athlete. But on the field, Jackie Robinson was someone so transcendent as a talent, I would argue that if there are 5 or 6 guys who have changed the way the sport is played, Robinson is among them. And I was talking to a friend of mine. I said, I'm doing this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Like a million people are going to see it. It's about Jackie Robinson, and I don't mention race at all. He's like, well, you can't do that. So that's his entire story. I said, all right, you're not like exactly a Rasmus friend of mine, but you're a really smart guy, and you think that's his entire story. And it's not his entire story. And if I was Jackie Robinson and I was awesome, I was transcendent at playing that sport, I'd want people to know the manner in which I was transcendent.
Well, exactly. And let's start with the fact that he was, as you point out in many ways, he was Ricky Henderson before Ricky Henderson.
He was a big dude, too. He was Henderson before Henderson, except he was a middle infielder. Now, you have to realize that if you're under the age of 30, okay, you might think like, a middle infielder is somebody with pop, right? Remember the whole, you had Jeter, you had A-Rod, you had Garcia Parra, those guys all at the same time, and Nomar could hit 30 home runs, A-Rod could hit 50. But for a long time, that was not the norm. If you were a shortstop or a second baseman, you were a live little dude, right? Or you were tall and thin. You were like Mark Belanger. You could pick it, but you couldn't really hit it that well at the dish. So that was unusual that Robinson, he was a strapping guy. He was almost 6 foot tall, 200 pounds. Now you think that's not very big at all. That was awfully big in 1947. If you follow something like the NHL, I remember when Mark Messier was in the league and he was what, 6'1", 210? And that was this just gargantuan, ferocious, frightening power forward. Robinson was basically the power forward of middle infielders as a second baseman. And at the same time that he was this sort of spark plug shaped guy, like a more toned Kirby Puckett, he was faster than anyone maybe had ever been to that point in the league. He was fast. He was big. He could hit for power. He was obviously ferocious. We know from his sort of moral composition, And he was a guy who was there to basically kick the ass of everyone who tried to stand in his way.
I'm looking at his 1949 numbers. How's this for a season from your second baseman? A 342 average, a 432 on base percentage, 37 steals, 16 home runs, and 124 runs batted in.
Look at his total bases for that season, right? It's well north of 300,
I think. Yeah, 313.
Now, if you just hear that number in a vacuum, it might not mean anything to you. 300 total bases is like big boy total bases. You can make the Hall of Fame and be an offensive power and never have 300 total bases in the season once. My personal hero, Carlton Fisk, was that way. And it wasn't because he was a catcher who didn't play a lot of games, because Don Zimmer ran him out there 150-plus times a year for a couple years in a row. And even still, like in 1977, he didn't get there. So that Robinson did that while playing this position, and let's not forget, this was a time when no matter what, if you were just kind of like garden variety, like white guy who everyone wanted to see excel, you were going to get smoked on the double play when you tried to hang in there as a second baseman. But it was a time where a lot of people did not wish to see Jackie Robinson do well. And when he was in there as the second baseman on the double play, and don't forget then, you have your blind side to the runner. It's not like the shortstop who clears the bag and he sees everything in front of him,
right,
and he elevates. People were taking out Robinson. So he basically, I feel, to play that position and do what he did, he had to be, in the piece I compare him to, a ship's cleek, like that bit of metal that you wrap, right, the rope around when you're kind of coming in to pull it in and fasten it secure to the shore. He had to be like that, but he was, like you said, Henderson before Henderson. He changed the way the game could be played because he redefined the middle infielder position.
Well, and of course, in the early part of the 20th century, baseball was all about small ball with sacrifices and the hit and run and stolen bases, and then Ruth, in many ways, changed it. It became a power game. But when you watch that video, that famous video of Robinson taking a lead off third base, rattling the pitcher and stealing home, and you think, in today's game, there's nobody who does that. Nobody even thinks that you steal home. You know, if one person steals home in a season, it's front page news. But Robinson made that a legitimate threat every time he was standing on third.
He brought power to all aspects of his game. He made power kind of a fluid concept. And it was a lot of small ball, especially there had been a power era by then. And it's interesting that Ruth was in the 500 home run club when no one else was in the 300 home run club. And Ty Cobb won a triple crown with something like 9 home runs. Mm. Not one of them cleared the fence. And Tris Speaker was kind of a Jackie Robinson-like player. But he was someone who did. He invaded the psyche of the pitcher. And you see that now a little bit. I remember watching the Red Sox this year that there are pitchers that do get rattled. Ian Kinsler, of all people, veteran, right? Second baseman, doesn't do much, almost cost him a game, did cost him a game, almost cost him like a bigger chunk of the World Series. I remember watching him get on second base, though, and he just was this veteran where he seemed to know that the pitcher would be rattled. And he was taking this lead. He wasn't going anywhere, and you could see the divided concentration. It made me think of Robinson, who's going halfway down the line. Now, it's like sometimes when you're out in, like, say you're out in your car, you're out in the Kimball Mobile, right? And you pull up to an intersection or a gas station, and someone walks up to your car. Like, you know they're approaching you on foot. What do you think? You think, uh-oh, here comes trouble. This can't be, this isn't going to end well, right? And it could just be someone who wants directions. But when you see that kind of presentation, you're like, oh, dear, I don't want to do this. That's what Robinson was when he was off of third base. He's so far down that you're thinking, what is up with this guy? What does he know that I don't know? It's not going to work out well for me.
Well, I can't wait to see the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal as we celebrate Jackie Robinson's 100th birthday. Can we share your news about Sam Cook?
Oh, right. Yes, Sam Cook. I am doing a book, just a contract signed with Bloomsbury. And they have, your music fan, you probably know this series. It's called the 33 and the Third series in honor of the record 33 revolutions per minute of the LP. And each book in the series focuses on a given album. So I'm going to be doing one of these books on Sam Cooke's Live at the Harlem Square Club, 1963, which is this sweaty club in Miami. And weirdly enough, Cooke, speaking of race, would tour with a white band, backing band, and he would tour with a black band. And he was always trying to get his audiences to come together, and the A&R people were like, nah, man, do this song for like the white girl slumber party. And his black band was like, no, let's go down to the club and just tear the roof off the place. So basically, he goes to this club, does this performance that's one of the greatest live recordings ever. And I think he figured out on that stage during that performance how to write what is the most significant song of the 1960s, A Change Is Gonna Come. So it's the story of that particular journey via that particular concert stage.
Can't wait for that as well. Colin Fleming, check out his website, colinflemminglit.com. And if you have access to cardboard, magic markers, make a sign, get down to the monument and say, open that monument for Colin.
Grassroots.
There you go. Thanks, Colin. We'll see you next week.
All right. See ya.
Colin Fleming, Tuesdays here on Downtown.